Vegas, baby! We recently hit the town running to catch up with the big players at the latest ICSC event. On this episode, what happened in Vegas? It's all about retail.
There's a lot of inbound interest, and there's been some real action.
That's the familiar voice of Adam Ifshin, the founder and CEO of DLC Management, one of the nation's top owners and operators of retail properties. Adam's a returning guest who came sporting a stylish Panama hat and, more important, armed with fresh insights into a sector that's still on a path of reinvention. Adam and DLC recently published a piece on changing fundamentals in the sector as part of a campaign called The Rent Is Next, and we'll talk about it on the show. Coming up, tips and takeaways from a high-rolling retail player at the ICSE. We decked out the SiriusXM studio at the Wynn Hotel and Casino for a sweeping conversation about the sector that you'll only find here on our show. I'm Spencer Levy, and that's right now on The Weekly Take. Welcome to The Weekly Take, and I'm delighted to be here in Vegas at the ICSE with our old friend Adam Ifshin, CEO of DLC, on the show. And today we are doing this from the SiriusXM studios right here at the Wynn. Adam, thanks for coming out.
Thanks for having me back, Spencer. You know, it's a long time since when you first started The Weekly Take, and I was on at the beginning of COVID. So I'm actually excited because I think the industry's a fair bit better off now than it was then. So I'm excited.
Well, it certainly is a fair bit better off, and I'd say retail, more than any other asset class, has gone from being not institutional to being squarely main institutional in the last 5 years. Is that a fair way to put it?
I think it's a very fair way to put it. The amount of institutional interest and action, I think there's a difference, right, between interest. You know, they were tourists for a while. They're looking to move here now, and you know they want a permanent visa. So it's been great. You know, we started doing institutional joint ventures coming out of the global financial crisis, and quite candidly, it was for a very long time really, really difficult to consistently raise capital for open air retail. Now it has become, it's not easy, but it has become markedly easier.
Since we're friends for a long time, I've gone with you on your journey along the way, and I've seen that institutional change of them saying, well, we're not taking the call to get them in here. And just talk about for a minute before we get into the types of institutions that are out there, because I have seen some changes in that. Talk to me about how DLC's portfolio, what it looked like 5 years ago, what it looks like today.
So 5 years ago, we were at the sort of beginning of the tail end of the pandemic and the start of the supply chain induced inflationary period that we went through in the following 2 years. At that point in time, we were about a little bit over $2 billion of AUM, roughly 70 assets. We were not on the West Coast. We were as far west at that point as Dallas. And so what has changed? The portfolio is more than two times the size that it was 5 years ago.
So about 4 billion AUM.
We are up over 4 billion. We have recently closed $300 million worth of assets
about
in the last 2 weeks.
How many assets?
100.
100, wow.
And we're up to close to 23 million square feet. The portfolio, all the metrics have been up and to the right consistently. Occupancy up, rent up. You know, we use some of the same metrics that the REITs use, even though we're private, just to benchmark ourselves. Releasing spreads, same store NOI growth are all, you know, off the charts high numbers. The way I like to phrase it, Spencer, is not only is the portfolio twice the size, the caliber, the quality of the portfolio is markedly better, and fundamentals performance is markedly better.
5-6 years ago, you had a high concentration in the Northeast. A lot of it was in what I think it's fair to say, some would call secondary markets, but you have moved up to some degree in terms of the size of the market, in terms of the quality of the market. Is that another fair way to put it?
I think that is certainly a change that has gone on in our portfolio. We have progressively become less weighted to the Eastern Seaboard and more fully nationally dispersed. We are in more primary markets than we were 5 years ago, absolutely. But we remain highly convicted about the secondary market trade too. If you look at what we did last year for example, some of the markets that we bought in are clearly primary markets. Southern California, Phoenix, Dallas, Florida, Charlotte. But we also bought in Baton Rouge. We bought in Waco, Texas. We bought in Oklahoma City. We bought in, we had already been in Denver. But we really continue. It's not like we changed the investment criteria and now we're only about primary markets. I don't think that would be fair. We may be more convicted than ever about secondary markets. We just closed last week in Omaha, Nebraska. $100 million transaction.
Did you get a Dairy Queen with Warren Buffett while you were there?
Warren was regrettably unavailable, but that's okay. The answer is I did get Dairy Queen because I grew up, you know, going sometimes in the summer to northern New Jersey where the only ice cream in far Sussex County was Dairy Queen.
Well, where we grew up, it was Carvel, and Dairy Queen was a treat, though. Dairy Queen was a little like one ring outside of the Carvel area.
Well, and I live where Carvel started now in Westchester County, New York. Thomas Carvel started in Yonkers, New York. So my wife is very much a Carvel person.
Well, I love Fudgy the Whale and Wednesday is Sunday at Carvel too. But let's talk now about your strategy of not going completely primary. And by the way, I'm agreeing with you for two reasons. Number one, I believe the next 5 years, you're not going to see a tremendous amount of interest rate compression, which means you're not going to see a lot of cap rate compression, which means you should take the yield today. And if you're going to a Baton Rouge or an Omaha versus, say, a Dallas or a Los Angeles, you're probably looking at, for comparable demographics, 100 basis point discount, maybe more.
That gap was consistently over 100 basis points. More recently, I think best in class secondary is now closer to 50 to 75 basis points. But that doesn't mean that, you know, good operators and good allocators can't find spread. I mean, we bought Whole Foods anchored, $1,000 a foot in sales, Baton Rouge, Louisiana, 66th largest MSA in the country, Power 4, LSU, 3 miles away, state capital, almost an 8 cap. Whole Foods, great lineup of both convenience, value, and lifestyle tenants, Nike, Barnes & Noble. Great, great asset. And almost any cap. That asset in Dallas, sub six, for sure.
Well, that's 200 basis points. But I think what our listeners, and here comes the first math warning on today's show. If you're buying a great asset in Baton Rouge at 8%, your cost of debt at, call it a reasonable amount of leverage, 60% leverage, you're probably looking at 6%-ish kind of debt.
Or less.
Or less. And the reality is that 200 basis points of positive spread is unachievable in industrial. It's unachievable in multifamily.
Look, it's clear that, you know, do you look at the multifamily situation, they don't have those same robust fundamentals we have either. I mean, when we look at things, we start with the fundamentals, right? We want to be able to create CAGR off the strength of our team, our team's relationships, our team's track record, its experience. We want to create that CAGR. If we can couple that CAGR with 200 basis points plus of spread, we're going to be able to generate, even for assets that appear on the surface largely stabilized, we are going to be able to consistently generate value-add returns.
So that's
the bread and butter.
So math warning number two for our listeners, CAGR stands for compounded annual growth rate. And let's talk about how you define CAGR in the context of buying a new center. How much of it is top-line rent growth? How much of it is it expense savings?
There's very little to be had in expense savings right now, to be perfectly candid with you. We continue to see upward pressure on real estate taxes. We continue to see upward pressure on insurance, particularly in Sun Belt markets, where in addition to insurance rates being higher, there's been a remarking of what is a tier one wind area, right? So insurance and real estate taxes and some other energy-based components of operating expenses have gone up. But remember, we're largely in a net basis business, Spencer. I would say that most of what's driving it is rent growth, but at DLC, we're very focused on net effective rent growth. So the dirty little secret is, yeah, you can generate an immense amount of re-leasing spread. The issue is, how much money do you have to spend to get it? And as an investor, right, who has a fiduciary relationship to not only our capital, but our institutional partners' capital, we have to be extremely focused on the capital efficiency. We know we can get the rent growth because the team's awesome, fundamentals in our favor, right? But if you get it and you don't do it in a capital efficient manner, you're not going to generate the kinds of returns we're in business for.
So let's define the type of retail that you pursue. I know you pursue a variety of types, but is the majority of it grocery anchored? Is some of it power? Describe your portfolio.
So it's both. At our size and scale, at $4 billion, it's very hard to be exclusively in grocery anchored. It's very hard to be exclusively in power. We're in both. Roughly 70% of the portfolio has a grocer or a grocery component of a supercenter in the fee. And close to 85% of the portfolio has either some grocery component in the fee or shadow. And we actually very often like the shadow, and I'll tell you why, Spencer. It comes back to the fact that for us, CAGR may be the more important percentage math than cap rate. How much can I grow it? And very often, you know, look, grocery anchor, it's amazing, particularly when you have the great grocers, and we do business with all of them, with the Publixes, with the HEBs of the world, with the Krogers, with the Ahold's, with the Albertsons of the world. But those leases are very often flat for a very, very long time, and they're flat through their options. So sometimes you may be better off
with a shadow.
With a shadow, because what's left, I can really drive NOI growth, I can drive CAGR, I can drive NOI growth, and I'm not held back by, you know, you have 100,000 square foot center, 50,000 foot grocer, the typical classic single anchored center. If that grocer is Publix, or that grocer is Kroger, or that grocer is Walmart Neighborhood Market, it is highly likely that you are going to be flat forever on that rent through the options.
Mm-hmm. And I think it's fair to say this may be an overgeneralization, but I think you just maybe made it a fact, is that in a grocery anchored center, most of the money is always made in the inline space. And then in a power center, one of the things that has happened recently is where you've seen some weakness in some of the big power center occupiers. You've seen people breaking up the boxes and getting even better rent.
Look, we've been talking about this a lot lately. Our calling card from 2011 to 2022 was backfill. We were as good as anybody at backfilling the box. In that period of time, we did 8 Kmarts with low to middle digit, single digit rents, and we turned them into TJ, Ross, Burlington, Five Below, Ulta, a bunch of the furniture guys, Aldi, Lidl. I mean, I could go Harbor Freight. I could go on and on. Sierra, Marshalls, Home Goods. I could go on and on and on. We did 140 box deals in 6 years, from 2018 to 2024. We did 140 box deals, right? The thing about a center that has multiple anchors and is larger and is not purely grocery anchored is you have a lot of ways you can win. And to me, as a risk mitigator for capital, to which I have a fiduciary obligation, I want to be able to play offense in multiple different ways. With a power center, maybe hopefully it has a grocery component in it, but in a power center, there's much more likelihood I can densify the site, much more likely to be overparked, much more likely I can add pads, much more likely I might be able to subdivide and spin some of those pads off at an accretive spread to what I paid for the whole center. Much more likely that I can not only move rent if I can get a box back materially, right? I may be able to get a box back that pays $8-$12 and make a $20 plus deal. I can make money at that, but I can also still move rent in the inlines. And if I can do both, or maybe even three or four of those, then I have multiple avenues to get to that value add return, which is why we want to be in the space.
And value add in retail you define as mid-teens?
Mid-teens.
So in terms of other value add levers that you can pull, in addition to breaking up the box, bringing in new box tenants, you could also bring in healthcare tenants, different categories. You can also bring in multifamily. Tell me about those.
So we're doing a lot of both. Health, wellness, fitness, those are not, that's not new. What is new there is the willingness of tenants who you might need consent from to bring a non-traditional retail use in, their willingness to do that.
What are these today? Because back in the day, these were like, we don't want bowling alleys. What are the uses that they're concerned about today?
Retailers are evolving. They're less concerned about what I would consider to be sort of high intensity traffic uses, of which they would have normally put health and fitness both in. I mean, we recently We recently secured a waiver from a Fortune 100 company known to be very demanding on the lease side so that we could put a fitness center immediately adjacent to them.
I recognize the fitness center question about parking. Right. When I say healthcare, I want to expand the definition to include things like dialysis centers, like true MOB types
use. We do tons of business with all the major dialysis players nationally. Mm-hmm. We see much less pushback than we used to see from traditional retail anchors about putting them in centers. But the one that's really, I think, fascinating and driving is what I call big boy medical. So this isn't like a 4,500 square foot urgent care. I'm talking about doing a deal with a hospital system. We've done a bunch of these. They take 20 to 40,000 square feet. You're getting investment grade credit. We did one outside of Hartford in Vernon, Connecticut with Hartford Healthcare, double A Moody's credit. Same credit as the federal government in the United States, 30,000 feet. Peds, ENT, OBGYN, radiology, orthopedics, physical therapy, all under one roof, 30,000 feet. I needed a waiver from a grocer, multiple waivers from TJX. I needed a waiver from Staples. It took a very long time, but we got them. And that's 5-6 years ago. I would get that one faster now.
The beauty of that type of use is they don't necessarily need the retail frontage that a traditional retailer would need, because people are going to drive to the back of the center for their diet. They'll drive to Mars for that. And when you need it, you're going there.
100%. That said, though, many of those clients, and we consider them very valued clients, Spencer, are increasingly focused on a retail experience for, in that case, a patient. I'll give you one. We've done one with a veterinary clinic. We took an AC Moore in Frederick, Maryland, and we turned it into a full-scale 25,000 square foot veterinary hospital. Mm-hmm. Extraordinary net effective return on cost for our investors, extraordinary service to the community. And you know what? Once we educated the retailers about the demographics, who was going to come to this facility, and we really partnered with the operator. They gave us so much data to help the retailers get comfortable with their use, it turned out to be a win-win-win.
This will be a story for another day, but one of my great case studies is when I did a veterinary deal 20 years ago. And what I learned very quickly is that people, the last thing they're going to get rid of as an expense is helping their pets.
It is pretty extraordinary. I am not a pet guy. My wife and I had 3 kids in 33 months. It would have been squeezing another living being into our house at that point in time would have been a challenge, I think, emotionally. But the reality is that, look, pets are parts of 70% of American families. They are part of the family, and they are getting the opportunity to get better care and better experience. And they're turning out to be excellent, excellent retail partners.
Well, this is what I will call the Murphy moment, which is the name of my dog, Murphy. And he is as integral a piece of my family as anything else I could imagine. But I want to turn to your article that you wrote recently, Adam. And I know the title of it is different. I believe the title of it is The Rent is Next. But there's a section of it that really spoke to me, which was, quote, the age of the operator. And what I've been saying to all of my friends in all asset classes, this is the best time ever to be in real estate. You know why? Because for the last 20 years, certainly from 2012 to 2022, the capital markets people were the winners. Now, you know who's going to win? People who really know real estate. And there's going to be a separation. Do you agree?
I do agree. Everyone will accuse me of talking my own book, perhaps, yeah. But I do agree. So if you look at the arc of institutional investment in retail real estate, right? Mm-hmm. It was historically a 15 to 25% allocation. In the mall bust after the global financial crisis, it probably got down in a lot of institutions to 5 to 10%. And now they're edging their way back up. I think the key difference is that they understand, one of the things they understand is that retail is that form of real estate that's a lot closer to being an operating business than it is purely an investment business. And therefore, if you want to make the returns you're setting out to make in the space, you need to partner with a great operator. And a great operator is not just the best local sharpshooter. You have to be able to service that institutional capital. You have to have a great asset management team, great accounting team. Yes, you always have to have great leasing. You always have to have great owner's rep construction management. You always have to have all of those pieces, but you need to be able to also help that capital manage its capital, right? So a big part of it is operators need to be able to navigate. What I like to say is we have three sets of key stakeholders in the DLC ecosystem. The most important one is our team. And then 1A and 1B are capital partners, investment partners, and retailer partners. And if our team is best in class, what it is doing, it is creating an intersection between that capital and that retailer in a manner in which we generate an outsized return, right? Only the operator can do that. Otherwise, you're just picking assets in your cycle, market cycle timing. Mm-hmm. And the reality is that history has proven, not just in retail, but we've seen this in multifamily, we've seen this in logistics too. If you get that wrong and you don't have an operator to help you figure out how to turn it around, you're gonna have a real problem.
Let me push you a little bit. So one of the material changes I'm seeing in the office sector today is that not only are we seeing the same trend in retail where operators are winning, but operators are changing. And when I say changing, I now know a lot of office owner operators that own the retail in their own buildings, which is a big change. Are you seeing any fundamental changes in operating today versus, say, 5 or 10 years ago?
I think the biggest change in operating today is scale matters more than ever. Having, you know, really, really powerful relationships with the retailers matters more than ever. The nature of how you unlock value has changed. It's no longer the distressed straight lease up play, right? There's not a lot of quality real estate out there where you can buy it at 70, 80, even 85% occupied and just lease it up to 95 to 100 and call it a day and go home. So you really have to work to unlock it. So we've had to shape and continue to continuously train and upskill the team and help them understand the change in the market as the market has actually gotten stronger. You would think it would make it instantly easier, but the low-hanging fruit is just to lease the vacancy. If there isn't any vacancy, you gotta work harder to get to that CAGR that we've been talking about. I think that's a big difference. And I think there's a big difference between someone who's just gonna hire a third-party broker and say that they're going to be able to do that. You've really got to work. You got to dig. And I think that's just one of many places where the operator's skill set really, really comes to the fore now. And I think we're going to continue to see that. I think you're going to see it in office for sure. I think it's already there in office too. We've seen it for years now in our space. But I think the great, great team plus scale. Mm-hmm. Because we have such deep, huge relationships now with all of the best retailers in open air, particularly in open air value. They want to do business with us. We have a track record of delivering them, right? What does a retailer want? They want the store on time, on budget, and they want to make the cash register ring as soon as possible. And the operator side of doing that, permitting, design, construction, owner's rep, all of that stuff really matters to the blood and guts of the retailer. Because, you know, if you miss giving them the store on October 5th, they got to wait till March to get the store. Mm-hmm. They've ordered goods. They've ordered fixtures. That doesn't work.
We just had on the show, and this may sound like apples and oranges, but it's the same story. We were very fortunate to have Brian Steinwurzel on the show when he was talking about his conversion of 25 Water Street at Soma. Fastest, largest residential office to residential conversion ever. They bought it in 22. The first tenant moved in 25 months later after probably close to $1 billion of capital, digging two light and air holes.
This is where they cored the building out?
They cored the building out.
Amazing. It's an amazing project.
People don't realize that of all the things we can talk about, and there's 100 of them. I'm not saying any of them are unimportant. I think time is by far the most important.
I couldn't agree with you more, Spencer. And I think that, you know, people always want to talk about, you know, how great this deal was, that deal was. That deal for the investors, right, got a lot less risky and got a lot more profitable, which are the two things that investors want to hear about all the time, right? When are you de-risking me? When am I getting my money back? And when am I getting my profit? And the answer is speed is the single biggest determinant of that. And a best-in-class team and a high-quality operator should be able to bend that curve better than without.
Have you seen a change in the capital background today, foreign, high net worth, otherwise, in addition to the traditional institutions?
I'm glad you asked this because I think very much so. There is no question let's talk about the foreign capital first. The foreign capital historically shied away from open air retail. Wasn't sexy, wasn't High Street, wasn't CBD. They're rethinking that now because those yields are undeniably attractive. So that's a big part of it. And then, they have the same issues, right? They're overweight Europe. They're overwhelmingly overweight Europe. They want to be less overweight Europe. Large portions of the world geopolitically now, it's a lot dicier to think about deploying capital to those places. And in many instances, they're quite flush, right? They have more mandatory contributions to those programs, and therefore they've got to deploy the capital. So they're still very interested in the United States, and they're more interested in our product type than ever before. The key is being able, again, to partner with somebody who can bring them scale. The thing I hear from the foreign capital the most is like, you know, don't tell me you need $20 million in capital. That doesn't work for me. That's not efficient for me. They need to know not only that they can put out a significant amount of money up front and scale, but then you can programmatically build from there. I hear all the time, but there is a lot of inbound interest and there's been some real action. In some cases, direct. In some cases, partnering with the same groups that advise, you know, classic domestic pension fund capital.
So last question, Adam. I think it's the second time we've taped at the ICSC.
It is.
And I hope it doesn't take, well, we've been on, the show's been around for 7 seasons, unbelievable. But the next time you're on the show, which is hopefully sooner rather than later, 2 years from now or sooner, how is the retail space going to evolve?
So I think we have a really long runway here of positive fundamentals. And we say this all the time. Investment performance follows fundamentals. The fundamentals are the driver. The reality is that we have such a huge gap right now between what market rents are and what rents would need to be to incentivize new development at scale. There's always a little bit of new development. There's a historically low level of it now. I think we're delivering 5 million square feet of open air retail in the country this year total, which is like a minuscule number. It's like 1% of what it was in 05, 06, 07 a year. So it is incredibly, the runway is long because rents would have to rise so much to make the math work. The math just doesn't pencil right now for new development. And the reality is it took a very, very long time for our industry to wean itself off of the crack cocaine of new development. But it has done that in part because it was forced to, because of other structural issues that went on in the space. But the reality is that what really puts a dent in strong market fundamentals and causes the beginning of the downward part of a cycle. We just saw this in multifamily. What was it? It was aggressive supply delivery. Go to Austin, go to San Antonio, go to Houston. And we see, and other markets too. I'm not hating on those markets. We're big owners in all three of those markets. We are actively encouraging better days for multifamily in all the markets we operate in. But the reality is that we don't have any imminent risk of there being a supply-induced weakening of the fundamentals. And I don't, look, getting entitlements for a retail project, an open-air retail project, has the gestation period of an elephant. So the reality is that I think 2 years, you pick
how
the time frame.
What is the gestation period of an elephant, Adam?
You got to check. But I think the reality is in the next 2 years, I think fundamentals, rent's going up. Net effective rent is going up. I mean, retailers are already actively trying to get in front of 2028 lease expirations. Mm-hmm. That's a new phenomenon.
Well, you know, it sounds like data centers. You got to think 5-6 years ahead before you can get your data center in there.
I just hope we can all get power.
Amen. So on behalf of The Weekly Take, my good friend who I've known forever, Adam Ifshin, CEO of DLC, one of the industry leaders, and I might add, an extremely well-dressed man today.
Always a pleasure. Thank you for having me, and thank you for the kind words about my attire.
You bet. And thank you to our friends at SiriusXM for letting us use their studios. Another great show about retail here at the ICSC in Vegas, the Super Bowl of retail. Great day. Great to be with our good friend, Adam Ifshin.
You're the man when it comes to the real estate podcast world. We love it. We love coming on. Appreciate it.
Rock on, brother.
Thanks.
For more on retail and other sectors, please visit our website, cbre.com/theweeklytake. And look for more from ICSC and related content as well. And if you're interested in DLC's campaign, The Rent is Next, you can find that online and on the DLC Management website. Follow our show to stay on top of all our programming, and we'll return next week as usual to bring wholesale insights from the world of commercial real estate. For now, thanks for joining us. I'm Spencer Levy. Be smart, be safe, be well.